Hoopheads podcast is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at RaiseYourGameBook.com.
I would say the kids play hard for me because they know how hard I work. They know I stay up late and watch film. They know what I put into a practice. They know how much I care about Tuesdays and Friday nights and putting them in the best position to succeed. So I think that they see how hard I work, and I think that might carry over a little bit in how hard they work. And then the other aspect is yeah, I think it's respect. I do. I think those guys still have respect for me. They know I care about them on the court, off the court, in the classroom, in the community, and try to teach them a little bit about life, not just basketball. So I do think there's that mutual respect there. If I did not think my players were bought in and they weren't given max effort, I would not be. I care too much about the school and the community to keep doing that.
Joe Mackey is the varsity boys basketball coach at Brunswick High School in the state of Ohio. Joe played his high school basketball at Strongsville High School and then went on to play college basketball at Baldwin-Wallace University, where he was a two-time all-conference selection, a member of the 1,000-point club, the senior athlete of the year, and the Lenny Wilkins player of the year, an award given to the best local college player. Joe is a member of both the Strongsville High School and Baldwin-Wallace University Hall of Fames. As Brunswick High School's varsity coach, Joe is the all-time career leader in wins at Brunswick and in Medina County. Coach Mackey is a two-time Cleveland Plain Dealer Coach of the Year, a four-time District Coach of the Year, and the 2016 Ohio High School Coaches Association Coach of the Year. During his 23 years at Brunswick, Coach Mackey has sent numerous players onto the college ranks and impacted the lives of many more, while also being elected to the Brunswick High School Hall of Fame, the third such honor in his basketball journey. After you're finished listening to this episode, be sure to tell your friends about the Hoopheads podcast and leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher. Be sure to take some notes as you pick up some great coaching wisdom while enjoying this episode with Coach Joe Mackey from Brunswick High School in the state of Ohio.
Hello, and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. Tonight, we are pleased to have with us from Brunswick High School, Coach Joe Mackey. Joe, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Joe and I have known each other for a long time, so it's a pleasure to have him on the show with us tonight. We want to start out, Joe, by going back to when you were a kid growing up in Strongsville and how you got into the game of basketball and what made you fall in love with it.
Well, it wasn't that hard. You know, back at that time, Strongsville was, I had a lot of great basketball. And, you know, growing up, watching, coming to the games, and I always knew that, you know, one day I wanted to be a Mustang. And like I said, when we played, you and I both played, it was kind of like the glory days of Strongsville basketball, and just happy to be a part of that. And, you know, from there, just falling in love with the game, and obviously then had the ability to maybe play in college and had to make that decision to play, and then ended up at BW. But it wasn't really a hard thing. My dad coached, my brother played at Ed's, and like I said, I grew up watching a lot of great players at Strongsville, so it was kind of instilled in me from a young age.
So when you get up to the high school, and this is a personal recollection as well as one that you can reflect on. And I don't know if you and I may have talked about it 20 years ago, but I certainly haven't talked to you about it any time recently. When I was a senior and you were a sophomore and we played Lorraine Admiral King in the districts, and the game came down to a final game tying shot that Admiral King had to go to the length of the floor in 3 seconds. So I'm just curious to get your recollection of that particular moment and see if it dovetails with my recollection.
Well, I was just a sophomore and you know, had the privilege of playing in that game. Great game all the way through. I think they were state ranked at the time. And I recall, and I think we have film on it, his foot was on the line, so it's really a two.
All right, good work, Joe. I might have had to jump through the microphone and come after you if you hadn't backed me up on that.
No, it was a long 3 seconds, and his foot was clearly on the line. I think we have film to back that up. Unfortunately, there's no replay like there is now in those last couple minutes.
Yeah, it'd be nice. I was at half court looking down towards that corner where Gladden went up for the three, and I still have this memory burned into my head of him, both of his feet being on the line as he goes up to take the shot. And that's one that I'm sure even now, and I can hear it in your voice, and I know for me that that's something that's a game that will live with me forever. And I think those losses sometimes stick with you a lot more than the victories.
Oh yeah, you said it best. They do. They do for sure. And that's a game that played so well, played so hard. I don't even say we had them on the ropes. We had them beat. We won the game. That game's over. But obviously, referees are part of the game. And yeah, that's just something that you're 80 years old. You still think about that one.
Yeah, there's no question about that. So as you continue on after I'm gone and you continue on and you keep playing there at Strongsville and you start looking at the opportunity to play college basketball, can you talk a little bit about how you ended up at BW, what that process was like, and why that ended up being such a good place for you to go and play your college basketball?
Well, I think with any kid, you know, you have to be realistic. And, you know, I wasn't getting the offers like you did, and Tucker was getting some offers as well. And you know, I was 5'10", 5'11" point guard and couldn't shoot it a whole lot back in high school as well as I could when I got to college. But I was just very realistic, and I knew D3 was, if I was going to play, that would be the level that I was going to play at. I just decided I had to decide if I wanted to be a student athlete or I just wanted to be a student, go to Ohio State and do that thing. And you know, I think more than anything, I think my dad was pushing me to play. I don't know if it was selfish because he wanted to come watch me play, but I think he thought it would be good for me to at least try it my freshman year. And then I ended up at BW, and Coach Bankson was a Hall of Fame coach and, you know, was a second father to me. And, you know, you just like when you played, I'm sure you those guys, your teammates in college, tend to be your best friends. And I couldn't have been a better experience for me. So it was definitely the best decision I've ever made was to play. I thought long and hard about it and just thought I'd listen to my dad and give it a shot. And it turned out to be, like I said, one of the greatest decisions I ever made.
So from that experience, when you look back on that and you think about, boy, I could have gone to Ohio State. I could have not played basketball and just been a student, and the ball would have stopped bouncing a little bit sooner for you. So now as a high school coach, when you have kids who are kind of facing that same decision-making process, do you feel like you're able to give them good advice because you were in that situation yourself?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we talk about it all the time. You know, I've been here 23 years, and we had three scholarship kids in my 23 years at Brunswick. And we've had a lot of guys that, you know, have gone on and played Division III, but we have not had a lot of scholarship kids. So the fact that I played Division III and can talk to them about it, it does help because, you know, certain guys are better off going to Kent State, Akron U, Toledo, Bowling Green, schools like that, playing intramurals, and then paying all that money to go to a D3 school and, you know, just to play basketball. And they might be the 9th, 10th, 11th man. So it's a tough decision to make, and I think every kid's different. But it's hard to play. I mean, Division I basketball is you know, so many great athletes, and, you know, Division II as well. And then you get your Division III, and there was as well, it's just Division III. But it's some really good basketball, and it's hard to play at any level. So we've got a lot of guys that, you know, have a passion for basketball. But part of our job as coaches is to make sure they understand it's not as easy as people think to play in college. And if any coach, when they come and watch you play, and they take the time to drive 2-3 hours to watch you play, and they're recruiting you, that's a really big thing. I don't care what division it is. And we do a lot of due diligence with our players and making the right decision. And even if they are getting recruited, do they have that drive to play? Because, you know, do they really want to wake up at 6 o'clock in the morning? Do they really enlift? Do they want to go to conditioning at 2-3 in the afternoon after attending 3 or 4 classes? So, I think it's really helped that I've played at that level, because most of the players I've coached that have gone on to play in college are D3 players. So, it's definitely helped that I was able to play 4 years at Baldwin Wallace.
So I assume you're not only having discussions with your players as that process is going on, but you're also having discussions with parents. Do you find sometimes that parents can be, let's say, unrealistic about where their kid can play, at least early in the process? Or do you find that people are?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so how do you go about educating the parents in terms of what the level of play at Division III is like? Because I think one of the things that I find all the time as I'm out and talking to people is that, you know, Division III is looked down upon by especially parents, again, probably because part of it is there's just not scholarship money out there, and part of it is everybody thinks their kid is better than they really are. And so it's got to be very, very difficult for you as a coach, and I'm sure for, you know, Division III coaches, to be able to go into a kid's high school or go into a home and really try to sell the kid that, hey, you got to be pretty darn good in order to be able to play college basketball at any level.
Yeah, well, I think that to answer the first part of that, I think most parents are very unrealistic. And, you know, one of the things that I've always prided myself on, not just in coaching, in life in general, is just honesty. And I've had parents say, you know, coach, what are you thinking for college? You think he could play at OU and this kind of school? And I'm just real honest. I said, actually, I don't even know if he can play Division III. go over to Baldwin Wallace, watch him play John Carroll. And then I ask how many letters he's gotten, and the answer is usually zero. And yeah, so I'm very honest with our parents, our players, not just about playing time, but about college as well. I think it's, you're setting a kid up for failure if you're telling a kid he could play here or play there when he's never scored a high school varsity point. So yeah, we try to educate the parents and talk to them about the process, but you know how parents can be. That I have really good parents at Brunswick. I will say that I'm lucky, but I think a lot of that has to do with the fact is we're just extremely honest with them from the start and look at their talent level. And, you know, if they say, well, I think he could play here, I think he could play there, like I said, my first response is how many schools have contacted him? And the answer usually is zero. So, I just think the honest approach, and, you know, then we obviously try to help as much as we can. I know AAU is a big thing, but Division III level especially, they kind of contact those high school coaches a lot. And then it just comes down to the right fit. I just actually was at the Baldwin Wallace game tonight. I have two players that play for Baldwin Wallace, and I have a player that's at Heidelberg. So, I think we do a real good job of just being extremely honest with parents about where we think their son could land if he decides to play. And the kid's got to want to play too. I think sometimes the parents want him to play more than the kid actually does.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So you said something like, you said that the parents are really good. Do you think that's because you guys have been there and you kind of have built the program up and they understand that you're trying to do what's best for their kids? Or do you just think that you're lucky? Or what do you think that is?
Well, I think it's – I had a mentor at Cuyahoga Falls. His name was Mike Manier. He actually won a state championship for Central Howard. And when he was mentoring me my first year, I was an assistant for 1 year at Cuyahoga Falls. And he didn't really talk a whole lot about X's and O's with me. I think he knew I kind of had a firm grasp about that. But he talked more about how to deal with parents and how to run a program. And I think that really benefited me, because – been here 23 years, and I can't, maybe five, I would call them parent problems. And I think some people have five parent problems in the first five games of the year. So I've been very fortunate here at Brunswick. It's a blue collar city still. And I think the honesty that I start in the preseason with, and then I think they know how much I care about their kids. Guys 1 through 15, or actually 1 through, you know, 42, or however many guys in your program, I care about each and every one of them. And I think the parents realize that.
So two things there, Joe. One is, obviously, you've talked about how important being able to tell the truth is. And I think that's something that a lot of people find to be difficult, whether that's as a coach, whether that's just in their own personal life, is sometimes it's hard to look somebody in the eye and tell them the truth when it's not what that person wants to hear. So I think that's right. I think that's a big key that unfortunately, as you know, a lot of people don't do that. And by getting that established right away, I think you've really done something. And then number two, I think the other thing that you talked about is just how much you care about your players. And so what are some of the ways that you go about building that relationship with your players in the program? Do you do anything specific? Is it just a day-to-day conversation that you have with kids on the practice floor? How do you go about building those relationships?
Well, I think it starts in first and second grade when you first get them. You know, a lot of these kids, I'm very hands-on in our program. So when these kids get somebody in first grade, it's me. We start this Wednesday, actually. Our first and second graders are coming in, and I'll be instructing them on Wednesday night right after we practice. And it's time consuming, but that's how you got to build. And so I know these kids in first and second, and they start in our travel program in third, and they come up through our middle school. So you've already kind of forged a relationship. They come to all the basketball camps in the summer, so you've already forged a relationship with it. And then obviously, yeah, during the day, you know, some kids come down, eat my office with me, and you try to get to know them a little bit more, than just on the court. Yeah. And that's just something I've always prided myself on, is to get close with our guys. And, you know, obviously there's certain guys that you get a little bit more close with, that refer to you as a second father, those kind of things. But, you know, I'd like to think that guys 1 through, like I said, 42, still have respect for me. And the day that they don't respect me and won't play hard for me is the day that I just get out. I don't care how many wins I have.
Yeah, I think that's key. When you look at trying to get kids to compete and play hard, do you think that relationship piece of it is the biggest key to being able to do that? That by establishing a relationship with them, you can get them to push themselves beyond what they might if they didn't have that trust and have that relationship with you?
Yeah, I think it's a two-part answer there. I would say the kids play hard for me because they know how hard I work. They know I stay up late and watch film. They know what I put into a practice. They know how much I care about Tuesdays and Friday nights and putting them in the best position to succeed. So I think that they see how hard I work, and I think that might carry over a little bit in how hard they work. And then the other aspect is yeah, I think it's respect. I do. I think those guys still have respect for me. They know I care about them on the court, off the court, in the classroom, in the community, and try to teach them a little bit about life, not just basketball. So I do think there's that mutual respect there. And I will tell you, like I said, if I did not think my players were bought in and they weren't giving max effort, I would not be. I care too much about the school and the community to keep doing that.
So if you were going to go out and look at your program from the outside and kind of survey over your 23 years, what would you hope that people would say about Brunswick basketball?
I would say most of them would say they're very disciplined and they're unselfish. They play the game the right way. They move the ball. They're not selfish, and they don't yell at officials. They play the game the right way on both ends of the floor. I would hope that's what they would say. That's what other coaches have said. So that's what we kind of pride ourselves on, is not really worried about individual statistics, just worried about playing game the right way on both ends of the floor.
And so is that something that you go about teaching it daily on a, you know, in terms of how you treat officials, in terms of playing the game the right way? Is that something that gets talked about, team meetings, on the practice floor, on a daily basis?
Yeah, every day. Yeah, every day. We just spent the weekend in Columbus, and the people at the hotel, managers, couldn't believe how well our kids behaved, and no issues in the rooms or in the halls or anything like that. And it's just, you know, our job as coaches is far beyond just X's and O's and wins and losses. I mean, it's teaching them how to be a man and how to act in public and how to treat people. And so, yeah, I just, you know, for me, it's I've always said my coaches have all growing up. I've learned from every coach that I've had different things. And I would hope that at the end of the day, that when they look at my role as a coach with them, that I taught them a lot more about life than I did just basketball.
What are some of the things off the court or in terms of life lessons that you hope, if you talk to a former player that's been out of the game, you know, been out of your program for 10 years, what are some of the things you think they would say about what they learned, not X's and O's, but just about life from you?
I think that, well, there's a couple. We have our annual alumni game when they come back, and, you know, we go out after the games, and eventually they'll start talking about all my crazy halftime speeches and things that I'd say to them over the years. And at some point, the word competitive comes up. They've learned how to be competitive, and I've never apologized for being competitive. I tell our guys that all the time. Like, when you go for a job interview and you're down to the final three, sometimes it's who wants it a little bit more, who prepared a little bit longer for that interview. So I would say something along the lines, they're probably talking about how I always preach that you know, being competitive is not a bad thing. Dependability, we always talk about dependability. They always say, hey, coach, remember that 15-minute rule, always 15 minutes early, practice, ready to go. And then the big one for me, too, is consistency. I've always thought that was a big word for our guys, is consistency. I don't want you to, you know, practice well one day a week. You know, I want consistency. I want consistent effort. I want you guys in life to be consistent. I want you to be a good parent one day a week. You should be a good parent 365 days a week. So I would say those three things are kind of like what our guys will come back and talk about more than anything, which is not a bad thing.
So are those standards that you preach formally, or are those just things that they pull out from what you're doing day to day?
I just think we mentioned those, Mike, so many times. You know, we play Mentor on Friday night here, and they've got a really good team, and, you know, we've got a pretty good group of kids. And, you know, sometimes at the end of the day, you know, it's who might want it just a tad more. You know, and we talk about being competitive. We talk about the consistency aspect time and time again. I want guys that are going to behave consistently in the classroom, not just, you know, 3 or 4 days a week. And, yeah, we talk about it all the time. I think that's a really important part of life, not just, you know, being disciplined and everything like that. You have to be consistent with it.
So when you think back to your career, and you mentioned earlier how you learned something from each one of the coaches that you played for and have been a part of what you've done, can you talk a little bit about, maybe pull out one or two of those things from, you know, maybe from Coach Bankson and, you know, maybe from Coach Casey that you learned that you've applied to what you do even today?
Well, I think, you know, Coach Casey and Coach Connors, they just, they got to know me a lot better, you know, off the court. And I remember the relationship I had with Coach Connors and going into his office almost on a daily basis and getting to know him and his family. He cared a lot more about me than just basketball. They both cared about me off the court as well. Coach Casey just went to our game against Wadsworth this year, and I got a chance to reminisce with him a little bit about our teams from my sophomore to senior year. And so, yeah, my high school coaches were more about just showed me how important it is to get to know your players, which I try to do with my guys as well. And then, you know, Coach Bankson and his staff really, really taught me a lot of things about basketball that I never knew existed on the defensive end, and just a lot of X's and O's and things like that really helped me early in my career. And then, like I said, Coach, you know, the best compliment you can get as a coach is when, you know, you're referred to as a second father. And Coach Bankson, to me, is definitely played that role for me. He always looked out for me, taught me the game of basketball, taught me a little bit about life, taught me about how important it is to be dependable. Just some really good male role models in my life were my coaches. And I guess that's probably why my dad was a coach as well, and haven't had the positive experience I did at Strongsville and BW. It just kind of felt right that I should probably give this coaching thing a whirl.
So do you think it was those guys that made you want, like when you were growing up as a kid, let's say when you were in junior high, did you have any idea that, hey, I want to someday coach basketball, or were you not thinking that far ahead at that
point? No, Mike, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I'll be the first to admit it. I was an average student, and I just tried to figure out what I wanted to do in college. I figured I'd get into sales a little bit because I can, you know, communicate with people and, you know, make a couple bucks here. And I thought I'd just get into sales somehow, and almost did, actually. Almost started working for Coca-Cola, and then this job at Cuyahoga Falls came open last second, and I took it, and then got the Brunswick job the next year, and it's just really worked out for me. But yeah, I would think my dad getting me to focus, maybe trying to play some college basketball, because if he didn't do that, I probably wouldn't have went to Baldwin Wallace, obviously, and wouldn't have played, and probably wouldn't have got that passion to actually coach. So I would probably credit my dad more than anybody for steering me in the right direction, and then Coach Bankson kind of took over from there.
So have you ever had, during the course of your time at Brunswick, have you ever had any thought, or if you go back to when you first started your career, any thought of coaching at a level other than high school, any thoughts of ever going back and, you know, coaching at BW or going into college coaching at all?
Yeah. I actually thought my sophomore year in college, I thought that I was going to end up coaching in college. I was going to be like that graduate assistant and pick up guys from the airport, make about $10,000, just do all the dirty work and try to work my way up that way, and maybe latch on to a program where they do well at the mid-major and then end up, you know, some Big Ten or something like that, and just kind of work my way up and then get my own gig. That was my initial goal. And then I did what a lot of people do. I met a girl and ended up marrying her, and figured I need a little bit more cash than the 10 grand as the GA. And that's how Cuyahoga Falls ended up. And I got the Brunswick job in year two, and I just kind of took off with it and really enjoyed it. And then there's been a few instances where the BW job has come open, and I've gotten a lot of calls and showed a little interest. I think this was it the last time, but it was a simple decision. They actually offered, they were allowing high school coaches to interview. The first time it was just you had to have college coaching experience, which I didn't. When Dwayne left, they opened it up, and you just needed high school experience. So I think I had a decent shot at it that time around. But I went through a divorce about 5 years ago, and I think the job came open maybe four or five years ago. And then it was a pretty easy decision. It would have been less money and see my kids less. And that certainly made it a pretty easy decision for me to stay at Brunswick. But now I'm 23 years in, like I said, and I don't think at this stage of my career would make a whole lot of sense. And I don't think anybody's going to be knocking at my door to go coach in college. So I think I might have blew that opportunity. But like I said, I, you know, my kids have always been able to come to the games. They've kind of bled blue and white since they were babies. And I don't think they want to get on a bus and drive to Capitol on a Wednesday to watch their dad coach. So I think it was a good decision for me.
Yeah, I think that's rare. Again, you see, I think, less and less with, you know, the turnover in the coaching ranks, just either from guys getting burned out or people that, get run out of a program or just don't have the success to be there for as long as you've been able to be there, is becoming, I think, more and more rare. And so to the idea of going back somewhere and starting over, from a college standpoint, especially with the change in lifestyle, and like you said, the travel and the ability to be with your kids, college basketball coaching is a whole different animal on that front.
Yeah, it is. And having the high school atmosphere is still, in our league, and, you still have like Brunswick Medina games. Like you don't really get that a whole lot at the D3 level. So to take a pay cut to see my kids less, just to, the intriguing part would have been to coach just a higher level player, and seeing what you could do in the recruiting end of it and everything like that. But I'm very comfortable here. I've worked with a really great administration and board here at Brunswick, and Yeah, it would have had to been a really a great situation for me to ever leave what I have here. It's just been a great experience for me and my kids.
So you talked about the high school atmosphere. I want you to go way back to your first year coaching at Brunswick. What was it like coaching against Strongsville? The first time going against your alma mater and just that whole experience.
You know, I people ask me that, and I honestly don't remember it. I did know that I think we beat them one time that year at home, but we were so, I don't want to say bad because it's disrespectful to my players that year, but we were so, that program needed some work. So I was probably so wrapped up in trying to figure out how we're going to win that game that I never really thought about the, you know, the Brunswick and the Strongsville rivalry. And as long as we're being honest, at the time, and Mike can attest to this, like it really wasn't a rivalry because Strongsville beat Brunswick every time. So it really wasn't that much of a rivalry. And that was one of the things when I took the job, they asked me what my goals were. And I said to be consistent, to put a consistent winner in and year out, which we've been able to do. And then I said, I want to make the Strongsville game an actual rivalry, and for years there we both put some pretty good products out there, Brunswick and Strongsville, and they had White and those guys, and we had Farrell and some good Payne and some good teams, Forsyth, and but we really had some battles there with Coach Lynch and Coach Eicher, and I people ask me that, and Strongsville was great to me. They always treated me with a great deal of respect, and the community has always been great to me, but I, once I switched over to the blue and white, I haven't lost respect for Strongsville. I hope they do well every game in the season, except for when they're playing Brunswick.
Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Alan Stein Jr.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at RaiseYourGameBook.com.
So if you think back to that first year, I'm going to ask you another first year question. What do you remember in terms of your biggest challenge? When you walked in the door that first day of practice or that first day in the fall, what do you remember about being the one thing or two things you said, boy, this is what I really have to fix, or this is what we really have to do if we're going to get the program to where I believe it should be?
Our youth program was non-existent. You couldn't stand up on our gym floor. Nobody cared about basketball. Our kids didn't even know what open gym was. It was bad. There was a lot of fixing to do. And that's probably why I got the job, though, because I was 24 years old. At that time, somebody said I was the youngest D1 coach in Ohio. And I wasn't married at the time. I didn't have kids. So I pretty much, during my interview process, I said, you guys need somebody that's going to live in this gym for about 5 years. It's gonna be a process, but we can do it because it's a huge school. And their football program was having some success. Their baseball program was having some success. And I just pretty much promised them that your basketball program will too, but it's going to take some time and you're going to need somebody young to go in there and turn this thing around. And they fell for it. And here I am.
It worked. So
yeah, it did. Good strategy.
Yeah, it was a good strategy. So those first couple years, how did you go about, especially as a young coach? I think this is one of the things that is somewhat intriguing for people out there, is how did you go about then putting together your coaching staff? Because obviously now, if you look back 23 years on, you've built relationships with lots and lots of people that if you needed to hire staff, you could. At that time, as a young coach, your network is a lot smaller. So how'd you go about putting together a staff, and what were you looking for then as a staff member, and then what are you looking for today?
Well, the first thing I did was I contacted Chris Sabula, who actually went to Brunswick and knew all the ins and outs and, you know, a little bit about the program. He played there, and I played with him in college. And, you know, one of the smartest valedictorian that's Brunswick, valedictorian's college. Like, he's kind of a smart guy. And so I got I talked to him and asked if he would come on just as a volunteer, because he's not a teacher, and it's hard to find help that, you know, that can have practice at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, guys that can show up. But so I got him right away as a volunteer, told him to show up when he can, help me scout, you know, just help me in the community, introduce me to some people I need to know, that kind of thing. And then I went and got my college teammates, because, like you said, I didn't really know anybody, didn't have any relationships with anybody. So I went out and got a couple of my teammates that have graduated to help me out. And that worked out pretty well. And then when they all went their separate ways and moved out, I was able to get Coach Soy, who is a Hall of Famer, and get him on my staff. And then, you know, from that day before, I've had Kevin Broughton. I've had Tim Mattis, who was a coach at Royalton. Broughty's got his program there at Berea. And I've always just had something. Tom Harrington was, he's at Buckeye now, played at Baldwin Wallace. So I always had that connection. He was with me for 10 years, an amazing job that he did. So I've learned that through Coach Bankson too. And he always said to surround yourself with people that work as hard as you and are as knowledgeable as you are. And I've been able to do that for the most part here at Brunswick. Is I have a lot of good help. I certainly haven't been able to build this thing on my own. And obviously a lot of most of the credit goes to the players, but I've had some really quality assistant coaches, and still feel like I have them today. I got Coach Eicher now, who was my freshman coach. He's over helping me out. So Chris Sabula is with me. Ryan Kilbane, who played at Strongsville, he's with me. And I got a former player of mine who's coaching our freshmen. So I think putting quality staff together is extremely important, especially it's hard now at the high school level. Nobody wants to coach anymore. And nobody has the time to do it. And nobody wants to deal with the parents. But I'm still fortunate year in and year out to put together a great group of men.
What do you look for in those assistants? Like, what are the traits, if you had to start from scratch, or you're just describing the guys that you have on staff now, what are some of the traits that you would recommend to a high school coach out there looking for assistants? What should somebody be looking for in an assistant?
Well, you know, everyone's going to tell you loyalty, but, you know, at the end of the day, you want a coach that knows the game and can coach. So if I had a heart attack before the game or a stroke, that he'd be able to coach a team to a victory. Like, I want my coaches to coach and help and assist. That's what they're there for, not just to be loyal and, you know, not just to, you know, get the cones out before practice. I want my coaches to be able to understand what we're doing. I want them to be able to give me advice during the game that could be beneficial and help us win. So the loyalty aspect obviously is extremely important. But I like when my coaches know every aspect of the game. I don't expect them to stay in the office till midnight like I do sometimes, or come home and break down film forever and things like that. But I do expect them to have a great work ethic and be a great role model for our kids as well.
And what do you think when they think about you as a head coach, as their quote-unquote boss? What are some of the things that you think they would look to and appreciate about you as a head coach?
I think just that. I think they know that their voice is heard. I don't always listen to them. I mean, I don't always do what they tell me. But the fact that they're able to talk to me and make suggestions without me exploding on them or anything like that, you know, they have a contract, and that contract is the coach. And I don't know why anybody would hire somebody that couldn't make some suggestions throughout the course of the game. Now, some guys are better at it than others. Now, in-game adjustments, I think, are really important. Some guys have that knack, and some guys don't. But, you know, breaking down film, going out and scouting on a Tuesday night, those are all things that, you know, I think our guys are appreciative that I still do that. I don't just send them out. I go, too. I'm right there with them. So, yeah, I think that they enjoy that I give them the flexibility to coach and to teach and to be a role model for our kids. And I think they also enjoy the fact that we we're like a little family. Like we do our things outside of the court as well. You know, dinners, things like that. Those guys become family. You're with them so many months throughout the course of the year. So, they probably might tell you some negative things about me too, but I'll let you guys go find them for those.
That's right. We won't ask that.
I'm friends with Iker on Facebook, so I can usually get answers for that. So,
yeah. Yeah.
We'll get Iker to write his tell all book at the end of the year, Joe.
Yeah.
yep.
Idea.
Don't you wish in some ways, one of the things that I wish, you know, looking back retrospectively, is if I could give 9th grade Mike advice, I would say, Mike, keep a journal every single day. Just write down the things that happened on the practice floor, things that coaches said, things that you were thinking. And I just know I would have had a bestseller on my hands if I could go over the course of my playing and coaching career, the stories and just the characters that I came into contact with. You know, I think it'd be amazing to be able to have that type of book. And I wish I would have done that.
Well, we have one of our players, I'm sure your listeners probably are familiar with, Josh Heron. He's actually just got done battling leukemia for a second time. But Coach Harrington and I, like I told you, for Buckeye, we've coached for 10 years, and Josh played for us. And Coach Harrington found out that Josh kept a journal of all of our sayings at practice and games that made the guys laugh.
That's funny.
So better hope that doesn't come out. But exactly. He's got it somewhere.
Nice. Well, my daughter, when she was in middle school, she had a notebook, her and her friend, for one of the teachers in the class. And they would write down everything that this teacher said. And she seriously has a quote book that's like 20 pages long of things. She'd read it to me all the time and think it was the most hilarious thing. I'd have to kind of, you know, placate her and listen to it.
You reminded me when I was in high school, I had a teacher that would say a certain word too many times. I think it was like, and we would tally at the top of the page and keep track of that.
Yeah.
I did that my freshman year. We had an assistant coach that would say, okay. And we would tap each other all the time, and we'd count during the pregame speech. This is, of course, when I wasn't playing as much. And we'd tap and count how many times he said okay. So I think all students, players, tend to do those kinds of things and keep track of what their coaches are doing. So if we step away from Brunswick for a second, just put on your just general high school coaching hat. If you looked across the landscape of high school basketball today, I know we've mentioned it a couple times during the podcast that, you know, coaching high school basketball today is tougher probably than it's ever been. Just in general, not necessarily for your program, but what do you think are some of the biggest challenges out there for high school coaches and in keeping good coaches on the sidelines in high school?
Well, I think one of the challenges are, I mean, public education, you just don't know about it. You don't know. It's hard to really, you know, I've got a son that's going to be a senior next year, and you know, if he said, Dad, I think I want to get into education, you know, it's a great profession, but you just don't know, you know, with all the changes and stuff. So I think less males are getting into the profession, and it's really hard to be a successful head coach in a public school when you're not in the building. I don't care what anybody says. We talked about the relationships that you build with your players. It's hard to build those if you're working at Sherwin-Williams during the day and then you're coming at 7 o'clock at night to practice, you know, for 2 hours. And so I think that's where it all starts. You know, I think less and less people are majoring in education. So there's less coaches out there. And then obviously when they do get hired, then it's the parents that are driving them out. And athletic directors, board members sometimes are siding with a story here or a story there that a parent hears or makes up, and coaches just have enough and they just want out. And then they tell you they want to spend more time with their kids when really it's probably the parents that drove them right out of there.
Yeah, I think both of those points are really correct and spot on. I know even when I was coaching at Richmond Heights and my assignment was in the elementary school and we were literally right across the parking lot. So I was 50 yards away from the high school. And at the same time, I still felt to a certain degree disconnected from the kids in the program because again, I wasn't in the hallways every day saying hello to them. I wasn't shaking their hand and having them in class and getting them to come down and eat lunch in my office the way you're able to do being in the building. And I think that, you know, despite the fact that I was that close, I still felt that separation. If there was a change in practice time or something happened and the bus was going to leave 15 minutes early or 15 minutes late, I was always the last person to be able to know that. And it just made it, you know, it just made it much more challenging to build the kinds of relationships that I think, as you've said, are required in order for you to have the kind of success that you want to have. So I think that's a great point. And you do see the number of high school coaches that are not teachers in the building today is much, much higher than it was when you and I were playing, or even I'm sure when you started your career. There's just way more guys that aren't, you know, that aren't in the building.
It's a tough profession to get into. I mean,
it is.
You know, they don't make a lot of money. Those entry level teachers, they can go out another field and make more money. Everybody wants to coach. It's a great, you know, everybody says, I would love to do what you do, but you know, yeah, if you do it the right way, they wouldn't love it as much as you think, because it is a grind. And if you care and you put the time in that you're supposed to put in, and you care about winning and care about doing things the right way, it's a lot of hours for. My ex-wife used to say she thought I made about 10 cents an hour for all the time I would put in.
That's probably right. So that's a great segue into this next question, which is, I think a lot of people, especially parents of, let's say, middle school players and youth players, have no idea how much time a high school coach puts in, especially to your point, a high school coach who wants to be successful at a public high school today. Can you talk a little bit about kind of season to season, meaning spring, summer, winter, fall, how much time you're putting in and exactly what it is that you're doing at each one of those times in the year, so people have an idea of what it takes in order to run the kind of program like you've been able to build at Brunswick?
Well, you finish in March, and then the state tells you got to take a month off, and we do that. We follow the rules at Brunswick, so we give our guys a month just to go get away from the game, go to the state tournament, do whatever you got to do. And then once those 30 days are up, you start your lifting program. 3 days a week, you're in the weight room with the kids. Then you start your open gyms, and you try to work that around the AAU practices and things like that, that some of your players obviously are playing AAU. So we'll have open gym twice a week in the spring and lifting 3 days a week. And then summer is big, and for high school basketball in June, you know, because you have all your camps that you have to get ready for. And we've got about 200 some kids that'll come through, about 240 usually in that range, grades 1 through 8. And you're getting ready in the spring. You just don't get ready 1 week for that. You're getting ready in the spring and email and all the parents and confirmation and all that kind of stuff, letters, getting your stuff organized for camps. And then obviously you have your own mini camp for your team. You have your own team camp for your varsity team. Then you have your shootouts. So you utilize your 10 days there, but then you're also lifting and conditioning 3 days a week in the summer. And then the school year starts in August. It's another dead period. So our strength coach still can work with them, but we were kind of hands off for that month. And then you start up in the fall with open gyms twice a week, lifting 3 days a week. And then practice starts early November. And that's usually a, you know, 5-6 days practicing, scrimmaging 5 times. And then obviously after the scrimmages, you're breaking down the film, you're doing the stats, you're getting ready for the season. And then once the season starts, it's every single day you're doing something. And that's starts in November, like I said, and ends in March. So every day you got something going on besides planning the practices, which you put together a good practice, you're at least spending an hour working on that practice schedule. And then you're breaking down film. And then you're scouting opponents, and then you're getting film from other teams, and it's just a daily grind. And then you're playing the league that we do. you got to deal with the ups and downs. It's hard to win in our league consistently, and you know, if you're like me and take losing hard, it's a lot of stress. You know, it's a lot of stress. But and then on the flip side of that, you're trying to be a father. You know, you got two great kids that you, you know, that's your number one priority is to my two kids. So yeah, it's a lot of work. I know a lot of guys don't put in the work, and you know, it's probably a little easier for them. But I think if you do things the right way, it's a 365 day a year job, and you don't make a lot of money.
You're down to 3 cents. You're down to 3 cents an hour, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. You don't make that much money, and you get yelled at by parents, and you know, like I said, I'm fortunate at Brunswick where that parent aspect doesn't come into play a whole lot. But it is stressful. It's a stressful job. But the reward is you get to work with some really great kids and get to know some really great families and some coaches from other schools, and there's a lot of rewards to it. And like I said, it's a lot of, it's a grind, and I think that's why you don't see a lot of coaches, young coaches doing it, because they see and hear from other coaches just what it takes, and they just don't have that time because they have their own kids and they have their own, you know, their own careers.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult, you know, today. I think you did a fantastic job of describing what the challenges are out there in the landscape for, again, the average coach. And especially at a public school, I think one of the things that's interesting from that standpoint is the fact that, you know, you do such a great job of building the relationships with, you know, your youth program. And you're, as you said, you're very hands-on and have been involved in that. And that gives you an opportunity to build relationships where, as in a lot of places, you know, if the high school coach doesn't have that relationship, especially let's just say because there's a lot of turnover and you have a new coach every couple of years that doesn't have that kind of relationship, now those kids get to seventh or eighth grade and, you know, they may end up going to a private school and you've spent, you know, you've invested in those kids and now they're gone. And so I think that's another thing that's a challenge out there for public school high school coaches today.
Yeah, that's a good point. We've been real fortunate to keep our kids in Brunswick. Kid I just went and watched today, Michael Quiring, his family, we all went to Holy Name, and then he grew up in our travel program and had a lot of success in our travel program, and the parents all got close and the kids all got close, and at the end of the day he chose Brunswick. And I've always said that about, you want to go to Holy Name and you want to go to Padua and you want to go to St. Ed's or Ignatius, I mean, that's, say I'm Catholic, that's your priority, that's your, you know, if you want to go for the religious aspects of it, we don't have a choice. But here's our program, you talk to people that have been in it, this is what we do, this is how we treat our guys, you know, play a really good schedule, and fortunately for us, we have been able to keep a lot of our guys that sometimes might go elsewhere.
So you've mentioned the league a couple of times, and maybe there's some people that are out there that are listening that either are from the Cleveland area or just aren't familiar with the league. Can you talk a little bit about the quality of play in the league in relation to high school basketball here in Ohio?
Well, it's this year, I don't know if it's regarded as one of the best in the state. The last couple of years, I would say we've been right up there, even with those Columbus schools. But it's just a grind. I mean, we have, obviously you have Solon, who made it to the state championship game last year, and four out of their five starters are back. And then you got Shaker Heights, who's always has one of the more athletic teams in the area. And then you have Medina, a huge community. Their youth programs are rock solid. They've been good every year. And then you got Elyria, you know, out in Lorain County there. They lost to Solon, I think, this year only by like two or three. I'm sure I'm missing some schools. Strongsville, I know they've kind of fallen on hard times over the last few years. But, you know, we went in there being a rival game, and I thought they played extremely well against us the first time we played them. They're no pushover, and they showed that last year. Everybody said, oh, Strongsville's this, Strongsville's that. And they made it to the district final?
Yep.
So it's just an absolute grind. Euclid's a team that Everybody says, they're this, they're that, but you know, they're one of the better teams in the area this year. New coach that came in and has done a real good job. And you just don't play any games in our league and just roll the balls out and say, we got this one tonight. It just doesn't work that way. And then our independent schedule is very good. So, like I said, I think our league is very well respected. Unfortunately, the travel in our league and the lack of rivalries and things like that has really hurt the attendance and things like that. I don't think it's a great league from a location standpoint, but it's hard to argue the basketball and how good it is. It's a great league, but the travel is a bit of a joke.
That was going to be my question, because well, I remember when I went to Stronzo, just like the Pioneer Conference, everyone was so close. Mm-hmm. Like all the teams that we played were really close to one another, and the crowds were just crazy. And I just remember I know Stronzo's brought back the round ball rowdies and like traveling to away games and things like that. But I mean, I remember it was an event. Everyone was going to the game, whether it was in Stronzo or Berea and everything. And you know, we see something similar where I coach middle school basketball in Olmsted Falls. We have pretty good, because everyone's pretty close together in the SWC, and we all have pretty good crowds. But that's one thing that when I will go to a Stronzo game or, you know, anything in that conference, it just doesn't seem like the crowds travel, to your point.
Nope, they don't travel. You know, we usually travel, but it's hard to ask our students to drive an hour to Mentor on a Tuesday night. You know, Shaker comes to our place, and they're one of the top 10 teams in the area. We're one of the top 10 teams in the area, and they bring, you know, 20, 30 people. So it's just the league in general. I know when it split up and everybody was looking for somewhere to go, they just kind of threw this league together. And there's some great schools. I mean, like I said, you can't argue the level of basketball. It's good. It's great basketball. It's just it's tough. It's tough on Tuesday nights. I'm sure it's tough on athletic directors and the gates and things like that. But hopefully I tell you, if they want to buy me out at 30, if somebody wants to come in and buy me out, that'd be great. But I would hope at some point before I retire from coaching that they get it right and get the leagues a little bit I don't know if it's just the proximity, the like you said, they got it. We're too far. I mean, going to Euclid, going to Shaker, going to Mentor, going to Solon. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I know a lot of it's probably football driven, and you know, everybody wants to win. So, like, I don't want to go in this league. We can't win. Well, you know, I would hope that the old saying would be just try to get a little bit better and put together the best league. Like, I think the Garfield Heights and Shaker Heights and Maple Heights and Cleveland Heights. I mean, it starts right there. Those guys should all be in the same league. You should be in the same league, obviously, with Mentor. I mean, Medina and Strongsville for sure, wherever this takes us. But I don't think these leagues will last much longer. I really don't.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was going to ask you if you foresee there being changes coming. It just doesn't make sense. I think, to me, it would be hard to sit in a meeting if I'm an athletic director or a principal or whoever's making those decisions and argue that, even just from if you think about it from an academic standpoint, for a kid who plays, you know, who plays on Brunswick's team and goes and plays a game in Mentor on a Tuesday night, how's that kid have an opportunity to do any schoolwork? I mean, unless you're just trying to do it on a bus in the dark where the bus is bouncing up and down. I mean,
that's exactly where they're doing it.
You know, I mean, it's just not feasible. I mean, it's insane.
It really is, and like I said, I will play Mentor twice a year if they want me to. I have no problem with the competition, and you know, it's you know, Coach Krasancic and I have a good relationship, and I'll play anybody anywhere. But to have to travel on a Tuesday night, like you said, to Shaker or Mentor, just I'm not so sure. I would say there's zero positives to that.
Yeah, I mean, other than the actual on-court possibly competition, there really isn't a whole lot of good things that I think are coming out of that. Do you think, though, as you go down and you think about being prepared for the state tournament, do you think that the schedule that you guys play, not only within the conference, but then the independent schedule that you play, and this is one of the things that, you know, I always think back to both as a coach and as a player, that, you know, the tougher you can make your schedule, and obviously no one likes to lose, but at the same time,
right,
you got to be prepared for, you know, ultimately the state tournament. Maybe you're better off losing three or four games during the season to tougher competition, and then that drives you when you get to the state tournament. What's your thought on that kind of scheduling?
Well, I think it's all how you look at it. You know, we've won enough games now, and you know, when I first took over, I don't know if I would have had the same, because we weren't very good. But now that we've established a pretty good program and a reputable program around the state, like we just went to Columbus over break and got our clock there, played two really good teams, and you know, one of my quotes to the media was they say you can only get better when you play better competition, and that's about the only positive probably that came out of that. But we try to throw together a really good schedule to not only help us for the tournament, but just to help us for our league, because we face so many different styles in our league, from Menor to Shaker to Elyria and how they play. So nobody likes to lose, but in the long run, you don't want to win by 40 or 50 either. You're not getting anything out of that either. So, yeah, we try to get with the athletic director and, you know, try to put the best possible schedule together. We get asked to play in a lot of these one-day showcases. Saturday we'll be playing Olmsted Falls out there at Elyria Catholic, and it's good exposure for your program and for the kids. So I think it's important to put together a tough schedule. But, you know, you could sit there and say, you know, it gets you tournament tested. But I thought we were tournament tested last year and missed every shot in our sectional final against Medina and lost. So all it takes is one bad night. That's the beauty of the tournament. But you, I think playing a soft schedule is really does nothing for you.
Yeah, I would agree with that wholeheartedly, both from a playing and coaching standpoint. I think the more you can play and more you can be prepared by playing against tougher competition, the better off you're going to be come the end of the season. Joel, let's wrap it up with one final question, and that is, if you had to look back over the totality of your coaching career, what's a way that you have grown and improved as a coach from when you first started?
I don't get as many technicals. That's one of where I've grown.
Good work.
Yeah, I averaged one a game as a 24-year-old. I think the discipline aspect of it, you know, when you're 24 and your program's not very good, you tend to argue more calls, and the officials look at you like you're crazy. And I ran it in Ray with our players, and that's probably where all the stories come from. But as I've gotten older, I kind of pick and choose a lot more. Generations, you know, the kids have changed a lot. And certain kids can handle it and certain kids can't. And I think I've matured from that standpoint, and just when to go off, when that Mackie temper comes out, and when it just stays in. And I'm a lot more, I think, reserved on the sidelines. I've got a lot more respect from the officials. So I've tried to mature a lot from that standpoint, but, and I've grown as a coach. You know, I think I'm 47 now, but I'm still looking, I'm still going to clinics. I'm still trying to get better as a coach every year, every month, you know, to help our guys. So, I think I'm a much better coach at 47 than I was at 24, but the key is I still have the same passion as I did when I was 24.
Yeah, and I think that's rare. I think that's something that, you know, you look at guys who have been in it for a long time, and most of those guys who get to the point that you are, they have that passion. They've been able to maintain it, and a lot of guys just drop off over the course of time because they lose that passion, or they just, again, have families, or they have other things that call them away from the game. And the fact that you've been able to stick with it and maintain your love for coaching the game is a credit to what you've been able to do. So before we get out of here, Joe, if there is a way for people to reach out to you after listening to the podcast if they want to ask you a question or just get in touch with you, if you wouldn't mind sharing out your contact information. And if there's anything else that we didn't hit on tonight that you want to share before we go, feel free to do that now.
Yeah, anybody that has any questions for me or any coaches, anything like that, best way to contact me, I'm an email guy, jmackey@bcsoh.org. Be the best way, and I can help anybody that's looking to get in the profession or has X's and O's questions, youth questions, you know, I get a lot of questions from fourth grade coaches all the time. How do we attack this 1-2-2? These guys are killing us with it. So, yeah, anytime anybody needs anything about, I can help them out. Feel free to contact me, but I really appreciate you guys having me on.
Joe, it's been a lot of fun to reminisce with you and get a chance to talk to you a little bit about what you've been able to build at Brunswick, and we can't thank you enough for spending an hour or so with us tonight. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Hello, Hoopheads. This is Alan Stein Jr. My new book, Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, will be available from all major book retailers on January 8th. Raise Your Game takes a rare peek behind the curtain and shows you what the top coaches and players in the game do during the unseen hours. I share their routines, rituals, and habits, as well as proven strategies that you can implement with your team immediately. If you want to maximize your coaching impact and influence, order your copy today at RaiseYourGameBook.com.
Head Start Basketball's Player Development Academy offers Cleveland area players a unique opportunity to improve their basketball skills. Regardless of a player's age, skill level, or position, training with Head Start Basketball will elevate your game to the next level. Do you want to improve your ball handling, become a better shooter, or develop into a more skilled, confident player? Our Academy classes offer training that's designed to do just that. Our training sessions are innovative and will have you learning skills that are transferable to actual games. We have 4 different class skill levels for boys and girls, ages 4 and up. All Player Development Academy classes will be held at the Strongsville Recreation Center. For more information or to get registered, please visit www.headstartbasketball.com.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, brought to you by Head Start Basketball.